Welcome in, podcast listeners. Really fun show for you. My buddy Lance Taylor, 94.5 Jocks out in Birmingham in the first hour. Bobby Burak in the second hour. We're talking Dodgers, Padres, NFL draft drama, ESPN's Big Lies, and more. All of that rolling your direction. You'll be glad that you listened. You can listen live 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern on 300-plus AM FM stations in all 50 states, or you can listen to the podcast, as many of you are doing right now. Go give us 5 stars, please. Danny G is reading them this week, and on Wednesday, you may hear your name on the show. If you go give us 5 stars, the podcast begins now.
Outkick the coverage with Clay Travis live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern. 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
It's kind of an interesting weekend in the world of sports with the Jake Paul-Ben Askren fight. And Jake Paul just absolutely waylaid him. A lot of different baseball going on. And also the drama surrounding the NFL draft and where guys are going to end up. We're going to be breaking all that down with you. But there's a lot of tension that is still out there in the world of sports as it pertains to off the court and off the field related issues. And partly that's because sports media have decided that they need to cover sports like it is politics. In other words, there's not any difference at all. The line of demarcation between sports and politics is virtually zero now. They're one and the same. And so on Sunday, I was coaching Little League Baseball. And by the way, our Little League Baseball team is a real work in progress. I mean, I've got 9 and 10-year-olds that I'm coaching, and I don't know the range between what could happen and what does happen on any given pitch is seismic. I mean, we could get a home run, or we could have, in terms of batting, or on defense, we could obviously get a strikeout, or on defense. I mean, we had a couple of times over the weekend where we had ground balls to shortstop that went through the shortstop's legs, went through the left fielder's legs, and rolled all the way to the fence. Second baseman, same way, right fielder, all the way. Like, I have no idea what's going to happen on any given play. And so I am at Little League Baseball. I had games on Saturday and Sunday. That's what I spent most of my free time on. And a bunch of you out there in the Outkick army blow up my phone because there is a feature story from Adrian Wojnarowski on ESPN, on the main ESPN.com website. It's the top story on the website and on the app. And so I don't see it for a while. I get home and I'm catching up on all my emails and all the direct messages and everything else, just scrolling through, checking to see what the news is. And ESPN has published a story about the fact that the NBA is basically preparing for the league to shut down, depending on what the verdict is in the Derek Chauvin case up in Minnesota. So this is an Adrian Wojnarowski piece saying, hey, you know, depending on what the verdict is, if the jury doesn't find him guilty, then the NBA is just not going to play. I mean, that's basically the crux of the Adrian Wojnarowski story. And in that story, they report that the NBA previously had stopped playing and sports had shut down after Jacob Blake, an unarmed black man, was shot by police in Wisconsin. And that's a lie. Jacob Blake was armed with a knife. Police had been called because there was a warrant outstanding for his arrest. Purportedly, the police were called by the woman who was the victim of Jacob Blake's assault before, and he was at her house, would not leave, and she was seeking police protection. Police arrived. They told Jacob Blake to drop the weapon. He refused to drop the weapon, fought with them, and finally, the police officer fired at Jacob Blake. There were no charges that were filed because he was armed with a knife and because he was reaching into his car And the fear was that he was going to get another weapon there. That's why the police officer fired. That's why no charges were brought. So ESPN, in this big Adrian Wojnarowski piece, they report that Jacob Blake was shot and he was unarmed. It's 100% a lie. It is up as the lead story on ESPN for 4 hours. This comes on the heel of Mark Jones, who is one of the NBA announcers, reporting during a Lakers-Bucks game that Jacob Blake was unarmed and he was shot as well. This is a lie. So I put my OutKick reporters on this story, and I say, hey, and I tweet out about it, and I say, hey, you should reach out to ESPN and ask, do they have a comment on why their entire editorial process has failed, and they are reporting inaccurately that Jacob Blake was unarmed when he was shot by police, when Jacob Blake himself admits that he was armed with a knife, and oh, by the way, when the police were called because Jacob Blake was threatening a woman who had previously reported crimes committed by Jacob Blake against her. It's kind of an important detail of this story. ESPN doesn't issue any comment at all. Initially, they changed the Wojnarowski article. And then finally, hours later, they put in a correction acknowledging that they got it all wrong after the vast majority of people have already watched it. People might say, why do you care about this? I care because there is an intent to use sports to divide us all. That's what's going on. People out there who want to create the narrative that police are all awful and that white people and black people and Asian people and Hispanic people cannot get along, they are trying aggressively to divide us. And they are using sports, which used to be a major point of unification, as a way to try and divide us. And when you are reporting 100% lies, which is what ESPN was doing for hours all day, and if a site like OutKick and this radio show and the company that I own didn't exist, they would have never corrected the lies that they are spreading. They didn't correct the lies that Mark Jones was spreading on their television network. And if we hadn't reached out to draw attention to this, they would have continued to spread lies. And there are lots of people out there who still think, oh, Jacob Blake was 100% innocent. He did nothing wrong. Jacob Blake was armed, refusing to comply with police officer instructions, and the police were called to protect a woman who Jacob Blake had been accused of committing crimes against. That's the real story. That's a significant story. And last year, when the NBA shut down, they ended up shutting down for a falsehood, for a story they believed which was not true, and the NBA and ESPN and all of the quote-unquote woke universe out there in the world of sports are continuing to spread lies. I'm not telling you all my opinions are going to be right. Not going to ever tell you that. I'm going to get lots of things wrong, like you get things wrong, but I do believe it's important to get facts correct. Because if you disagree with my opinion, that's fine, but you can't end up in a situation where facts don't exist and aren't treated in a responsible fashion. And one reason why this show has exploded in popularity is because so many of you know deep down to your core that there is a lot of BS out there and that sports is being used as a conduit to peddle it. And that whether you agree or disagree with my opinions, I'm going to get my facts right for you every single day. ESPN doesn't. They should be ashamed of what they put up on their website as their lead story. They failed and they lied and you can't trust them, period. When we come back, Lance Taylor, he's about to have a colonoscopy. I don't know if he's going to be able to hardly talk to us. This should be fun. We're breaking down the NFL draft, the Jake Paul fight, and more. This is OutKick. Thanks for hanging out with us on a great Monday in April on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of OutKick, the coverage with Clay Travis, weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Bet your morning is going a little bit better than Lance Taylor at the Lance Taylor 94.5 Jocks down in Birmingham. LT, you are going in for a colonoscopy. I appreciate you getting up early in the morning to come on with us. How would you assess your overall physical condition right now?
Oh, man, I hope I'm not too dehydrated. Yesterday was one of the worst days I've ever experienced in my life. And you hear, you know, different stories about people that have done this before. And you feel like you'll be prepared, and they're probably embellishing a little bit and overstating things that happen. And I just can't tell you how miserable the last 24 hours have been. I mean, first of all, you can't eat anything, and you have to pound out this Miralax, I don't know, some kind of powder with all of this sugar-free Gatorade nonstop. And then you can imagine the results of it. And so I think I probably lost about 15 pounds yesterday.
I mean, a good thing would be you could make a fight. I mean, maybe you could give a better fight than Ben Askren did against Jake Paul. I know you stayed up. We advertised that quite a bit. I went to bed. I was thinking about ordering it. I think it was like $50. We advertised it a lot on this show. And then I was like, you know what? I'm tired. I don't know. I was following it along on Twitter, and there were all these different music performances and everything else. And I was like, I don't really want to be up until after midnight watching a fight that I don't care about at all. So I went to bed, and I didn't miss much.
Well, he is one of the most unlikable guys out there, Jake Paul is. I give him credit. I mean, he's built, you know, some kind of mini, you know, empire as far as social media followings. But, you know, my little guy was over, and so we were watching, and I know you like to do this with your
kids. How old is your son now?
So he's 13, but yeah, I just introduced him to the Rocky franchise this weekend. So we watched Rocky 1, and, you know, Rocky 1 is the critically acclaimed one, obviously won Best Picture in 1976, and I kind of explained to him, this one's about character development. It's going to be a little bit slower, but once we get to the fight at the end, then 2, 3, 4 are really going to explode, and it's a lot more action. So we watched 1. He was like, I liked it. So then we watched 2 and 3. Well, between 2 and 3, I started talking, hey, there's a real fight on tonight. It's Jake Paul. I made the mistake of saying you probably don't know who that is. Of course, Dad, I know who that is.
Adults out there who don't realize how popular YouTube is. YouTube is, for whatever what was the most popular station when you were, you know, kind of growing up in some way, like ESPN or MTV or whatever it is? YouTube is all of those rolled in together.
I was an 80s kid, so MTV was gigantic. And the way I know how big YouTube is, I don't know any of these kids, but a lot of mornings I'll check out just celebrity birthdays to see. And like, and I guess it's by Q score. I don't know how they rank these guys, but like the other day, Thomas Jefferson, and I think you and I talked about this, he would have been like 218. He was like 11th, and like nine of the individuals in front of him were YouTube sensations or stars. And they were all,
and you
like,
didn't know,
you know
them.
From the ages of 15 to like 22. I didn't know any of them.
Yeah.
But you know, this is what Jake Paul has done. And now he's become, yes, a legitimate boxer.
I got to tell you this. I don't remember. Yeah. So I've got a 13, a 10, and a 6-year-old. I cannot remember them ever sitting down and putting on the television without me being involved, with the exception of my 10-year-old who will put on Atlanta Braves games. Otherwise, you know, like when we were kids, the television was on a lot. You would walk through, your parents might check and see what you're watching. My kids are on YouTube. I mean, when they wake up in the morning, first thing they do is go straight to YouTube, and it can be to check and see who won the night before, whatever sporting event was going on. It can be to, you know, there's a variety of different things that they will dive into, but it's never, hey, like for me, when I was a kid, I would get up in the morning, eat my cereal while I'm watching SportsCenter on television, right? Like, hey, what happened the night before? I want to see the sports highlights. That was how I would start off the morning. And I imagine for a lot of you out there listening to me right now, that's the way that you would start off your morning when you were in school, or maybe some of you still do. None of the kids do it anymore. They get on YouTube if they have their own iPad, their phones, whatever it is, and check and see what happened the night before.
Yeah, I've only been on YouTube a couple of times. You know, I'll pull some old highlights from something, and that's the easiest way to do it. But you're right. That's all my little guy watches is YouTube. He carries around an iPad, and he's on it all the time. And, you know, he's into cars as much as yours are into baseball. And so there's a guy named Doug DeMiro that's some kind of YouTube sensation, a guy in his, I think, 30s or 40s, and he just reviews cars all the time. And so my little guy just watches that nonstop. But The YouTube thing has exploded. I got baited, though. He told me, yeah, Dad, I don't like Jake Paul. Nobody likes Jake Paul. Let's see if he gets beat tonight. And I started to look at the odds, and he opened the day at minus 175, which blew me away. I didn't know much about Ben Askren, though, but I started to read up on him. You know, national champion, I think two-time wrestling champion. I forgot where he wrestled, probably one of these Midwestern schools, Oklahoma State or something. And then, you know, was a really good record in the UFC, but I didn't realize the guy had never boxed. But the numbers started to drop. And when I saw minus 175, I figured what's happening is this is going to be a fixed fight, and they're going to say that Jake Paul has finally beat somebody legitimate now after, you know, Nate Robinson, now it's Ben Askren, and now you can get him. You can start to build more subscriptions on these pay-per-views. So I made the mistake of dropping $50. Not only that, if his number started to drop, I think it went down all the way to minus 145. So I jumped on Askren, too. And then when I saw him skin off when he came out, I knew it was over. I knew he had not trained today.
Yeah.
And then I also read up quickly after I'd already placed my wager that he was getting $500,000 win or lose. So there was nothing at stake for him. And then obviously – I'm sure you've seen the highlights how the fight went. I mean, the Jake Paul guy looks like, you know, he probably can box. I would love to see him actually fight somebody that has some credibility. But that fight, you know, I wasted $50 on the fight. You know, I lost, you know, too much money betting on Askren and basically wasted a night. I think Snoop Dogg had $2 million on it. At least that's what he said in the commentary.
He was on Jake Paul or he was on Askren?
He was on Jake Paul. I mean, first of all, some of the worst language. And I'm one of these dads that I've kind of opened up because I remember when I was a teenager that I pretty much watched everything.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've let, you know, my little guy, one of his favorite movies is The Hangover. So I kind of let almost everything go. There are certain movies that I'll pull the trigger on or I won't allow him to watch. But when we were watching this, I mean, the commentary, Oscar De La Hoya was completely slammed out of his mind. But, I mean, just it's Snoop Dogg and Too Short were just smoking the biggest blunts you could imagine, just right there on live TV, just cussing up nonstop, MF-er. And it was so uncomfortable. But right after Jake Paul knocks him out, Snoop Dogg jumps up, MF-er just won me $2 million. So I guess he had $2 million on Jake Paul. I don't know who would take a wager that big on something that I assume was fixed. But he said he had $2 million on it.
I watched the punch. I mean, Askren may not have trained very hard, and he may have gone into this fight without much of an impetus behind him. But that looked like a legit punch that floored him, right? Like, I mean,
it was a temple shot, too.
Yeah.
So that's one of those that, you know, if that hits a legitimate fighter, I mean, we're not talking about somebody that's got a good chin. I mean, that was a temple shot. So, you know, I think that puts a lot of guys down. I just wonder if it was one of these, hey, look, you're getting $500,000, and we want to make this so exciting. When you get hit flush, you go down. Just out of pride's sake, you can get back up and argue that the fight shouldn't be waived or whatever. That's just kind of what it looked like to me. But I agree with you. I mean, it was a legit punch.
I mean, I'm to the point now, having watched Jake Paul drop Nate Robinson like he did. I mean, Nate Robinson went to sleep, right? I mean, like, I mean,
oh, yeah.
I mean, he wrecked Nate Robinson.
I mean, he hadn't been heard from since.
Yeah, I don't know where Nate Robinson is. And then he hit this dude pretty solidly, too. I mean, initially it felt like it was kind of a crazy stunt, but I'm kind of curious now to see him actually box against somebody who is a professional boxer, right? Now, I don't mean like you know, Floyd Mayweather or something crazy like that. But I mean, you know, somebody who is full-time training to be a boxer, because he's waylaid a couple of people now.
Yeah, well, don't you think now that, I mean, look, your curiosity is peaked a little bit,
yeah.
I'm saying, you know, in the next 3 or 4 months, if he fights a guy that's got 11, 12 bouts under his belt, a guy that is actually a legitimate fighter, I mean, you probably would drop $50 or $60 to see it, right?
I think also it depends on what weekend it is. But, you know, we've had so much of a rush of sports as everything has tried to get caught up. You know, we basically since, what, June or July when the NBA and the NHL started last year, it's been almost hard to catch your breath because everything has been sort of caught up we had the several months without sports. But I think you can start to look ahead. Like right now, it's pretty quiet. There's not that much going on until the NBA playoffs, to the extent those are going to matter early rounds, NHL playoffs. I know we got the Kentucky Derby coming up in a little bit, but usually this is when the NHL and the NBA playoffs are underway. And I don't think the NBA playoffs start until like May 22nd-ish. And the same thing is the case for the NHL. And I know it's baseball, but it's early season baseball. So now is kind of a good time to slide in there if you've got a sporting event that you're trying to get some attention for.
Yeah, look, and if I'm Jake Paul and whoever's promoting him, I'm trying to get something in August because, you know, August is going to hit right there where nothing's going on. So you could own a Saturday night in August. But I assume that's probably what's going to happen.
It would be interesting to see what exactly is going to end up happening.
Another amazing takeaway, Clay, from that thing. Pete Davidson, you know, the comedian is Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, I know. I mean, yes.
I mean, he's dated both Kate Beckinsale and Ariana Grande, two of my complete favorites. I don't get it. I mean, he's a funny guy, but he is one of the strangest looking guys ever. But he was kind of the host, kind of the go-to on this, just what was a complete cluster, but it was one of those train wrecks you couldn't take your eyes off of. But, I mean, he was basically dogging out Jake Paul and just talking about what a complete piece of garbage he was the entire time. And so, I mean, there was a comical side to that Jake Paul had this whole production around him, but the guy that actually hosted it just destroyed him the entire time.
I would like to be affiliated with a total ridiculousness that is these fights, right? Like if they've got Snoop Dogg smoking blunts, and I know Mario Lopez was there. Yep. They had just a whole collection of different people. You're talking about Pete Davidson. Like it just seems like such a carnival of absurd excess that it's kind of hard to look away, if that makes sense, even though I did look away and went to sleep instead of watching.
Yeah, Al Bernstein, I think, was their one credible, you know, boxing commentator that was on there. I think De La Hoya was supposed to be that guy, but De La Hoya, again, I think he was drinking his own tequila nonstop. He was talking about what an idol Mike Tyson was fighting in his 50s, because now De La Hoya apparently came out last night, and he's about to set up some bouts. I mean, how much money? De La Hoya had more money than, I mean, it was Mayweather.
He owned his own. Yeah, I mean, I think that he owned. Yeah, he owned the productions of all of his fights. I mean, like he was, to his credit, and I think Mayweather kind of has followed the lead since. But these guys decided they didn't necessarily want the Don King of the world coming in and taking a huge cut of their checks when they are the ones who are promoting the fights. And so they were, I remember Mayweather, I mean, like every t-shirt that got sold, like he was making a piece of everything, right? Which more power to him. They're the reason. But you know, to me, you mentioned the gambling angle. Fights like these, if they can set gambling lines for them, given how rapidly gambling is moving around the country, like to me, that would be fun to analyze from a gambling perspective, right? And if you could start to get a piece of some of the handle, or you've got an official sponsor in the sports gambling space, which has the exclusive right to hang lines in a certain way. I mean, I think there's a lot of demand just from a sheer entertainment perspective for things like this.
Well, I know a lot of people that are up in the Nashville area that, you know, are using, you know, your FanDuel and using that handheld app. And, you know, these are a lot of millennials. And so they're very familiar with who Jake Paul is. So you just imagine how many $20, $30, $50, $100 plays were on that fight last night. But, you know, I saw our friend Todd Furman kind of call it out before the fight, the legitimacy of, you know, is this thing going to be a fixed fight? And I know Jake Paul has commented, at least he commented the day after on Sunday, you know, took a shot at anybody saying it was a fixed fight because, as you said, I mean, you saw the punch, but at the same time, I mean, a guy can open himself up. But I just wonder, you know, if you're FanDuel, if you're DraftKings, or if you're any major sports book, I mean, do you really expose yourself to a potential fight like that could be fixed?
Yeah, I mean, the answer would be in general, and this is the sort of the talking point that I would give for any of this. The best way to catch a unfair sporting event is to have as large of a gambling marketplace as possible, because they are the ones that catch people, right? Like all the match fixing that goes on, they can tell by the irregular betting patterns that come in. Right. So if all of a sudden money floods in one particular direction, that's when they pull the line and they wave their hand and they say, hey, something's going on here. The fix may be in. That would be a benefit, I think, of sports gambling becoming legal more places, is it gets harder to fix a fight or to fix a sporting event in general, because, you know, sunshine really is the best disinfectant, and the best sunshine is as many people wagering as possible.
Yeah, look, and I don't want to single out Askren, but a guy like that, that is done with his career, that, you know, hasn't made millions of dollars, you know, that's, you know, somebody like that is what you would fear, because now we've seen this partnership, a billion-dollar partnership with the NFL, with yeah. DraftKings and FanDuel. And you know, what I try to explain to people is, back in the day when the NFL distanced themselves from Las Vegas and from any kind of sports gambling, it was because guys were making $50,000 a year.
Yeah.
And
right.
realistically, you could pay a guy to drop a pass or to blow coverage or to throw an interception in the flats. And those guys weren't making, you know, $30 million a year. It's impossible to fix, to at least have these world-class athletes being involved in a fix.
Yeah, I think that's true, because the money has gotten so
large.
Yeah, too much at stake. And again, the thing I would say is, you can catch them in a way. The more regulated the betting market becomes, if anybody tried to do that, the abnormal betting patterns would stand out. Couple of other things that are out there. I don't know about you, but I love seeing full stadiums. And have you seen the highlights, like, for instance, at Mississippi State and Ole Miss, where they're just like, hey, COVID's over here. And they have monster huge college baseball stadiums filled. Nobody's wearing masks. I saw a funny quote from Tim Corbin, who's a national championship winning coach at Vanderbilt. He's like, COVID is over in Knoxville, basically, because they had a great baseball College World Series, three-game series, not College World Series, but college baseball series. Tennessee, I think, is the number three team in the country, and Vanderbilt's number two. And Vanderbilt went on the road in Knoxville, and Tennessee was just, I mean, it felt like it was almost completely full stadium. They had a pretty raucous environment. I love seeing these things and then picturing all the, what I call the Corona bros, just kind of curling up in the fetal position and shivering, seeing how much fun. I mean, I don't know about you, but when I saw a home run hit into right field recently in Ole Miss, I tweeted it out and everybody starts throwing their beer and it's like pandemonium in the right field. I was like, my God, that looks amazing.
Yeah, look, and I saw your tweet where you sent out that Ole Miss is actually drawing more than the Yankees this year.
Yes, and that's right.
Obviously, they're playing better too, but I think it is pretty awesome. And I just, you know, during our show on Friday, this past Friday, I started to realize, when we were talking about Alabama and Auburn spring games coming up, that Alabama was going to set Bryant Denny at half capacity.
Yeah, 47K went in for the Alabama spring game this weekend.
But I sort of think it's probably going to end up being the largest congregation of people we've had since the shutdown.
I think that's right. Yeah. I think that's right. I think Alabama
right.
set a new yeah. record. I haven't seen any crowd bigger than 47,000 in a stadium in the United States since the March shutdown. Now, the Rangers, I believe, they were sold out-ish. They had like 40,000 roughly in the Texas Rangers Stadium. I think that was the biggest prior to the Alabama spring game. Which ended up with, I think they announced attendance at 47,000.
Yeah, look.
And if they were, let me ask you this. If they were, pretend that the opener of Alabama is instead of being in September, pretend it is next week, this weekend coming up. It's the 24th. If they allowed it, is there any doubt in your mind that the Alabama stadium would be 100% full for the opener of the season?
Oh, not even that. Like, Alabama plays Mercer, like, deep in the schedule this year, I think, in November. They open up with Miami, but that's one of those neutral site games. But if they were to play Mercer in 2 weeks and it was legitimate the season opener, I think, you know, probably a get-in ticket's $150, $200.
People are so desperate to be in the crowd, yeah.
Yeah, look, I mean, we're already – me and girlfriend are already lining up concerts for the summer. I'm just ready to get out and you know, just get out to events, man. I mean – it's just been so long, and it is so refreshing to see.
All right, NFL draft is now, whatever the math is, 10 days or so from now, next Thursday. A lot of talk going back and forth. I don't know about you, but I love watching the gambling markets in the NFL draft. Mac Jones had become a pretty good favorite to be the San Francisco 49er pick at 3. Then it now has swung back in the wake of his second pro day. Justin Fields is now favored to be the number 3 pick. You love college football like I do. you are also, like me, not a quarterback guru, brilliant analyst. But if you were looking and making a pick based on having watched pretty much every major game that Mac Jones has played like me, and pretty much having watched every major Justin Fields game like me that you have seen play, who would you take if you were the 49ers at three between those two? Because I think it's down to those two.
Yeah, look, I think it's a small sample size with Mac Jones, but I think I would go Mac Jones. And the only reason I say this, I go back and, you know, I look at this Ryan Day system and I go back to Dwayne Haskins, and the numbers were similar to what Justin Fields did.
Yeah.
And that's unfair to Justin Fields because I saw Justin Fields in a national semifinal game against pretty good defense at Clemson completely light that team up, and he did it in a variety of ways. So I think both these guys can be successful, but just one of the best deep balls I've ever seen thrown is it was Mac Jones this past year, and it was so consistent. And, you know, the guy's got a ton of confidence. And, you know, again, it was a small sample size. And I know, you know, ultimately you look at guys that, you know, a Mark Sanchez, you know, that was kind of the hit when he came out of USC. But you could still argue that Sanchez did have some success. I mean, he took the Jets to back-to-back AFC championship games. I know that was more so with that Buddy Ryan defense, or Rex Ryan defense, excuse me. But I think I would have to go Mac Jones. And it's amazing that that's become the biggest topic of debate for this draft, Clay.
Yeah.
You know, nobody's really talking about it. It's just Trevor Lawrence and you know,
Zach Wilson are one and two locked in.
Yeah, and then it's, you know, who's going to be the better quarterback? Is it going to be Justin Fields or is it going to be Mac Jones? And, you know, it's a big call for Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch because I think San Francisco's got one of the best rosters in the NFL. I mean, just 2 years ago, I thought they were the best team in the NFL. I thought they should have won that Super Bowl. If they don't have a fourth quarter meltdown, they do. They were just completely banged up. I mean, the injuries hit them harder than anyone in the NFL last year, but they're ready to win now. And, you know, I think either one of these guys can have success. But this is just a big decision for those guys, and I ultimately think it's going to be Mac Jones.
You come back for a couple minutes with you because I want to ask you about Tua and Dwayne Haskins and how that could play into the debate. We're going to be talking about that some, I think, going forward.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it. You listen to it. I think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
LT, you remember, we lived in an era for a long time where people talked about system quarterbacks in the college context. One of the first system quarterback arguments I can remember being made was against Steve Spurrier. Certainly Bob Stoops then got things kind of rolling. Mike Leach has had some over the years where people would say, as a pejorative, hey, you know, really, you can't rely on this or that quarterback because their system is so advanced in college football that they don't really translate into the NFL. Dwayne Haskins, as you mentioned, at Ohio State with Ryan Day, massive numbers, gets to Washington, everything implodes on him. Tua, monster numbers at Alabama, gets to the Dolphins, nothing happens in a favorable way. Meanwhile, Mac Jones, huge numbers with Bama. Justin Fields, huge numbers with Ohio State. You're starting to hear a little bit of a whisper. Could Ryan Day have a system? And at Alabama, it was Steve Sarkisian. Could they have created system quarterbacks? Also, a little bit more at Alabama, there's talk about just how good the wide receivers are. Do you buy into, with Mac Jones and Tua connection, Dwayne Haskins and Justin Fields connection, that you would have to factor that in going forward?
You know, I think I would buy more in that, you know, Tua had more talent around him. I mean, we'll be able to see with Justin Fields. And I mean, ultimately, I guess this question will be answered in the next couple of years. But to me, it seems more of a system with Ryan Day because Dwayne Haskins at times when he was playing for Washington looked like the worst quarterback in the NFL. You know, I go back to Tua last year, and I just think it was a boring offense with Chan Gailey, not a ton of talent, especially at the wide receiver position around two. He still went 6-3 as a starting quarterback, completed over 64% of his passes. I think Tua's going to be, you know, really good if he can stay healthy. I've never really questioned Tua's skill set. I thought it was more about his durability. So again, you know, this will ultimately play out, but I would lean right now, Ryan Day, it's more system with him. And I think with Alabama, it was just a ton of talent around these guys. And I think Tua's really good. And, you know, from what I saw from Mac Jones last year, I think he's going to be a pretty good NFL quarterback as well.
I saw an interesting question that was out circulating on the internet over the weekend, and I haven't tossed it up to you, so you have to be thinking on the spot. But the question was, you can go back in time and give any athlete 100% health. You know, not like not going to get nicks and cuts and bruises and things like that, but just they're going to be healthy enough to be pro or college athletes, depending on, you know, who you would pick. Which athlete would you pick if you could go back in time as a sports fan and give any athlete 100% health? Who would you pick?
Well, I'm convinced if Ken Griffey Jr. was 100%, he would have been the best baseball player of all time.
Yeah.
I really believe that. But another one that was – we got enough of Griffey's, you know, career that
he's a Hall of Famer regardless, yes.
Yeah. I mean, he's going to be one of the, you know, all-time top 20, 25 players. Bo Jackson was
that's the answer
guy.
For me. And, you know, Bo Jackson is the answer for me.
I know you've seen the highlights, and, you know, he was just that dominant at Auburn, you know, not only in football, but baseball, too,
yes.
when he was playing. And, you know, when his career was so abbreviated with the Raiders, and obviously he was an all-star with the Royals, if he just would have focused on pick his sport, which one, I mean, it wouldn't have mattered. If he stays healthy, I mean, he was unstoppable. He was just that good.
I think he's the greatest athlete that I have ever been able to watch and been a fan of. I mean, ever. Because you're right. I think he could have been a Hall of Fame baseball player if he had just said, hey, I'm just going to focus on playing for the Royals. And I don't think there's any doubt that he would have been a Hall of Fame football player if he had said, hey, I'm just going to focus on playing for the Raiders if he could have stayed healthy.
Well, I just remember going to watch him at a local, you know, small Baptist Division I school, Sanford. Auburn was playing baseball there. And, you know, as a kid, I checked out. It was a day game, and I went and watched him. And just seeing how massive, you know, he was a legit, you know, 235 pounds, had a complete cannon of an arm.
Yes.
And, you know, hit a 500-foot home run, legitimate. I mean, just had – he was a five-tool guy. And that was in baseball. And then obviously in football, won a Heisman Trophy and was arguably one of the top two or three college running backs we've ever seen. I mean, there wasn't a weakness to anything Bo Jackson did outside of getting hurt. And it was the Cincinnati Bengals. I think it was a playoff game.
I mean, if you could pick anybody in the 80s and the 90s and you could go back in time and you could give them the health to be able to have a complete career, I think Bo Jackson is the guy that most people would pick. And I think that he would have had some unbelievable accomplishments, right? And just in terms of what he was able to do.
Yeah, and I would have liked to see Greg Oden. I know that's kind of a weird pull.
Yeah.
But, you know, there was such a debate when he came out of Ohio State who should go number one. And, you know, Portland, you know, they take Oden, and he's just never healthy. And I know bigs are totally different in the NBA. You look at Jokic, you look at Embiid. I mean, they've got different games now, and the big has kind of disappeared in the NBA outside of
He could have been Shaq-like Oden, though.
Yeah, I think so, man. Just, you know, it's the only Final Four I've ever been to, but I watched Ohio State play that Florida team that had won back-to-back national championships or en route to winning back-to-back national championships. But watching Oden as a freshman with Mike Conley Jr. take Ohio State to the national championship game, he was just a dominant dude.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt. LT, good luck with the colonoscopy. Thank you for getting up early with us. Hopefully you managed to survive.
Yeah, I will not be on the Peloton for days. So I appreciate it, though, Clay.
That is LT. When we come back, we'll dive back into what I think is an interesting question. What will the 49ers do at 3? I'll give you the latest gambling odds and more. This is OutKick on Fox Sports Radio.